We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on bluechipspeakersnava.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Marilyn has brought her crew down from Gainesville, and this is the kind of example of fellowship that Marilyn, that's just what she does. She's involved. She works with ladies, guys. She's always there. I'm so proud that she's made the journey, and please give her a warm round of applause.
How's everybody doing tonight? Good. I'm nervous. I haven't done this in a long time, but I'm nervous every time I do it, so it really doesn't matter. I'm just going to be nervous. Would y'all mind doing the Serenity Prayer again? Moment of silence. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I forgot to get the book that I wrote to make this story from, so I'm just going to give it to you as God gives it to me. That's just a joke. I didn't write a book. My name is Marilyn. I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. I used other substances too, but because of the singleness of purpose, I'm going to stick to the verbiage of alcoholism. This day and age, there's not too many people that hasn't tried other things. I don't talk a lot about what it was like because we all know what it was like. We all know how to do that. I can speak a little bit with some clarity on what it is like today. I do have attention deficit disorder, and because I'm addicted to other substances, I can't take anything for it. So I might go here, there, and I hope that you can keep up. But it will tie itself together some way, somehow. I was born in Amherst, Ohio, in the year of 1957. That makes me 56 years old. By the grace of God, it's a miracle I'm standing up here even talking to you because I spent 22 years of that time trying to kill myself with drugs and alcohol. A slow suicide, and all of us know about that. My parents were just common people. My father was a factory worker. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. You know, when I got sober, I didn't realize that a lot of the things I had inherited, like the thinking of, you are so worthless, you are so sorry, you are so stupid, you are so ugly, you are too fat, you don't fit in, you're not a part of, you may as well stand outside because nobody's ever going to accept you. I never heard those words coming out of anybody's mouth, but I inherited that from my parents. They never said those words, but I believe that there's generational things that come down through low self-esteem. It's just hard for me to explain, but I believe that in a silent way I inherited a lot of that from my parents because they felt that way about themselves. They just didn't verbalize it. So from the time that I was a little girl, I tried very hard to fit in. I wanted to be loved so bad. You know, just because I'm a female, the reason that I love women in recovery is because I identify with their pain. I identify with those behaviors of what it's like to be out there seeking love. What it's to be like to be in here seeking love. Nothing makes me angrier than to see a newcomer come in and all they've ever known was to go to a bar and pick up a guy and sleep with him and seek that love. And for a lot of other reasons, I understand that. But I can't stand to see a man treat a woman badly in Alcoholics Anonymous, like when they walk in that door and they get 13 stepped and they haven't even had a chance at this thing. So they used to call me, and this is really not a very nice term, but I'm just going to tell you what they called me. At the Halt Club, I was known as the cock blocker. Now that's been about 18 years ago. I'm not that aggressive anymore. But if I saw you checking out a newcomer and I had my feathers in a ruffle, I would intercept you before you got to her. And then I'd just pull her aside and we'd start talking. I let people kind of have be who they are today. I kind of try to leave that one alone. Started using when I was 12 years old. By the time I was 14 years old, I was using some other substances, and I was using them in ways that a lot of us say we'll never do. I hated being me so bad that when I tried those other substances, I felt like I was okay. I felt like for the first time, I'm okay. I'm all right. I belong to this world. It was, to be in my own skin, painful and embarrassing and shameful. And those are just the three things that I can think of most. I used till I was 34 years old. I almost have as much time coming to meetings as I had out there using. And that's quite an accomplishment. But I didn't accomplish that. God did. And y'all taught me. You look familiar to me. I think I've seen you before. Came into the Halt Club in Gainesville, Georgia. I left. See, that's about how much time I'm going to put into that, what it was like, guys. I did everything that you can possibly imagine, except I was too afraid to go into the Bluff and places like that. I was what you would call it, pardon my language, again, a chicken shit alcoholic other slash thing. There was just a lot of things I wouldn't do. I didn't prostitute, but I would sleep with the person that I would get those things from. That's different, isn't it? I thought it was. So, you know, that's how I qualify myself as an alcoholic. What happened was, and every bit of my recovery is about what my higher power has done for me, not what I've done. By no means at all, it's what I've done. Came in 1994. The bottom that I had, which I had so many throughout the years, it's crazy what ones will get you. When I came in, I had a car, I had a place to live, and I had my son with me. I had lost my cars before, I had lost my homes before, I had lost my son before, I had died on several occasions from doing too much. But this time, what it took was we came up to Gainesville to live with my sister. She came down to tell me one day that I did not have to live that way anymore. And what that condition was living in a house with my ex-husband's mother. It was cockroach-ridden. He was physically abusive to me. And I knew that eventually if I wasn't around for him to do it to, it might have been my kid next. And I wasn't willing to chance him. The last physical encounter I had with him was my two-year-old standing between he, myself, with his hands around my neck up against a refrigerator trying to choke me. And here's a two-year-old child trying to push daddy away. And that's the kind of stuff that I put my kid through. And that's just a small amount of it. So we came up to Gainesville, Georgia. I continued to drink for another year. And when I came up to Gainesville, Georgia, there's a restaurant up there. And it's called Poor Richard's. It's a very nice restaurant. And I had a job there, and it lasted about 3 weeks because I was doing, like, sneaking drinks from the bar and bouncing around. And it was obviously, I was making really good tips because I was very friendly. But they knew that I was high, and they fired me. So within a year, I went from this high-end restaurant, Poor Richard's, to Poe Folks. And I got fired from there, too. So my bottom really was kind of like this. Is I'm sitting there with my son. Now, I'd got to the point where my son was having to get up on his own. He was having to climb up in the cupboards, get his own food, make his cereal. And I'm laid out in the bed because I'm so wrecked from the night before. One night I was sitting there with a quart of beer because I couldn't get my other things. And I'm wanting to choke this kid. I'm wanting to hurt him. He is driving me so crazy. I want to hurt my child. I said, something's got to give. This is not good. That next morning, and things are coming back to me. That next morning, I was late getting him to school, and he got mouthy with me, and I slapped him in the face. I'd never done that before. So it was getting worse and worse and worse. My son was starting to take care of me. And a lot of us know about that. So this is what my plan was. My plan was that I was going to go to meetings from Monday to Friday. I was going to save up all my... Oh, by the way, I went to work for an Italian restaurant now, and they serve beer, and I can drink there. So I was going to earn the money Monday through Friday, go down and do the thing that I do, and then go back on Monday and go to AA and save my money. This is a good plan. And I don't know what happened, but that Friday I had like a load of cash on me, and I was on my way to Atlanta, and something inside of me said, don't do it. And I hit the gas pedal, and I went to the clubhouse, and I did what I call telling on my disease. And I told them what my plan was, and they told me what to do, and they said, go home tonight and pray and ask God to relieve you of the obsession to drink. I've got a physical addiction. I've got everything, you know, I got to use on a daily basis. And I went home, and I woke up the next day, and it was gone. Tell me there's not a higher power. Tell me there's not a God. Real early on, I had a really... Somebody help me keep track of time. I don't want to go over, if you will, please. We had been living with my sister for about a year, and she was having to put up with my, you know, alcoholic crap. And I got sober, and 7 days sober, I was at the Hawk Club, which is up in Gainesville, Georgia, and I was at a meeting. Now, I made meetings, and I made... At that time, you could do about 3 meetings a day, and I went to every meeting that I could because I was scared to death that I was going to drink again. I got a phone call in the middle of the meeting, and it was my other sister, and she said that my sister had been driving trucks. She was a semi-driver, truck driver, and she went into... They got her to the hospital. She got sick. She went into a coma, and they didn't think she was going to make it. I mean, this is out of nowhere. I was just with her. I was just with her 2 days ago. She was fine. So we flew. It was 7 days sober, and I had learned a lot from you guys, but you guys taught me that serenity prayer. Now, this is what set that whole thing up for me was this. I had a dream about my third day of sobriety, third night into sobriety, and my sister was in the living room, and I'd gone to bed, and I had a dream that I had relapsed. And the relapse in my dream, I was traveling, and the relapse in the dream, like things were just kind of falling out of me, and I was dying. And we got to the hospital, and the only people that were there was my father, my sister, my brother, his wife, and my stepmother. And my sister Linda wasn't there. Now, we were very, very close. We went through a lot together. I couldn't understand why she wasn't in that. At any rate, I died, and I woke up to my knees, and I was taken there by an angel. And I've always had an angel. Even doing LSD, I had an angel. And I am not kidding you. It was the same angel that met me in this dream that I had when I was doing the LSD. Excuse me for bringing the drug up. When I awoke up here, and I got off my knees, my whole body was just trembling. I mean, it's crazy. My eyelids were trembling. My lips were trembling. My toes were trembling. Everything was trembling on my whole being. And I stood onto my feet, and I ached, and I was sore. And a woman came up to me, which was the angel, and she handed me a baby. But there was no connection between me and this baby. And then I just woke up. What was so special and precious about this dream and what I felt afterwards was that I felt an unspeakable joy that I have never experienced in my life. I felt happy and giddy and joyful and free and peaceful. And I wept and I cried and I wept and I couldn't stop. I hit my knees and I thanked God. And something told me to go in there and tell my sister Linda that I loved her and I was sorry for all the things that I've ever done to her. Something told me to do it, and I did. So I walked into the living room, and she was rolling a joint. And she said, don't say a flipping word to me. Just sit down and shut up, because I was already Miss AA. She shouldn't be doing that. I was able to tell my sister that I loved her. I was able to tell her how sorry I was for all the things that I had done, the things that I had stolen from her, the lies that I had told her, the places that I'd taken her, because she was a lot more innocent than me. And 7 days later, I got to sit next to her bed and know exactly where she was going to go. And it was sweet. And I knew Man, I wish I could have traded places. When I got to that hospital, I screamed at God and said, take me. She deserves to live. I don't. And by the end of that experience, I said, just let go, because where you're going is going to be wonderful. And the serenity prayer got me through all of that. I also read a book, and I share it with my friend Rhonda. I meant to share it with you, and I forgot about it. It's called Embraced by the Light. It's not AA approved, but it'll be something that you'll love. At any rate, I came back and decided that, no, it was decided for me that I should have a sponsor, so they appointed themselves. I love that. This is great. This girl that appointed herself to me was quite a bit younger than me. She was from Kentucky. She cussed like a sailor, and she screamed at her children. But she knew these steps, and she knew how to work these steps. I'm not to judge. She taught me well. We stayed together for about 4 or 5 years. I have had... Well, let me tell you this. This is really more for the women. Well, you men can get something out of this, too. When I came into sobriety and I started working those steps, you know, my deal with the first step was, I'll admit to you I'm an alcoholic, but I will quit when it gets really bad. So I admitted I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not admitting that I'm powerless. I don't think I even did that until I was about a year sober, that I even realized, hey, wait a minute, that's why I couldn't get sober, because I thought I could stop on my own. The way step two worked itself out, and I say the way they worked, that I worked these steps, but then they worked into me. Step two was, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, I was of the mindset that I do not drink and I do not drug. Thank you very much. I'll be fine. Y'all might need to use those steps, but I don't, because I'm a really great person without them. Well, God quickly showed me that I am a nutcase from the word go. He had to show me the insanity part of that, because I believed in a higher power, but the insanity part I didn't get. So he showed me my crazy thinking that led to my crazy feeling that led to my crazy behavior. Step three was so powerful for me. My sponsor and I did it in the clubhouse up in Gainesville. Nothing really spectacular happened. I didn't have this big glowing light go around me, and I wasn't raised up off the ground, and I didn't have this like feeling of I don't know what. But what did happen for me was the next day. I'm an all-or-nothing person. The next day, I decided I did not need a man to take care of me in my life. And I decided it would be a very good thing to tell all of you. It wasn't like I was getting hit on, okay? I was 89 pounds and was bony, and, it, you know, I wasn't all that. But I felt like I needed to tell the men that I did not need anyone to take care of me and my son, that Alcoholics Anonymous, God, and myself would take care of him without bringing a man into my life. And I did that for 3 years. That's not me. That's God. Because, see, I always wanted a guy to take care of me. But the reality was, I'm a control freak, and I usually would pick somebody that I could control, and I would take care of him. And then bitch at him because he didn't bring in enough money. My choices of men, this is a good one. I always get a good laugh out of telling this story. When I was in my disease, I was married to a very, very nice man. Now, he was like I was. He was an alcoholic, and he was a hot mess, and I was a hot mess. But he took good care of me. I always had a car to drive. I always had money in my pocket. There was always money in the bank. We had a decent place to live. And plus, he helped me stay loaded. So we came to Georgia. We got married, came to Georgia. Everybody here know what a dry drunk is? Okay. So I don't have a program, and my husband's on the road, and I am so paranoid that the only thing I could do is peek out of my curtains. And I'm not using or doing anything, but I'm peeking out of my curtains and watching people go to the mailbox because I'm too scared to go out there and say hello. So a friend of mine came down to stay with me. Before you knew it, we were out ripping and running and doing our thing. So when my husband was on the road, I went to the beach one day, and I fell in love with Mr. Wright and Mr. Charming. Now, remember the guy that I told you that I was married to that took very good care of me? I have a broken picker because the guy that I traded him in for, lived with his mother. The grass in his front yard was this high when I got there. I went into his bedroom, and there were dirty socks hanging from the chandelier, which wasn't really a chandelier. There was dirty plates sitting around, and there was cups with mold in it. And that is the man of my dreams. And I stayed messed up with a broken picker for a pretty long time. I just got married 3 years ago, and I've got a good man now. Now, we have our problems, but we use our higher power to get through our stuff. So, I've done a lot of things, a lot of different jobs. I'm going to tell you about my relapse, because that seems to be a really important thing, a part of my story. At 9 years sober, I was an insurance salesman. That doesn't happen to people like me. I mean, an insurance salesman isn't that big of a deal, but people like me doesn't make it to be an insurance salesman. All I ever did was work in a factory, waitress, and that's the best that I could do. So I got a job, I got my state license, and I'm being an insurance lady. And I was cooking on the stove and pushed down some chicken that wasn't unfroze yet. It scooped up and it burnt me from here, down my chest and all over my stomach. When I got to the hospital, I was carrying the blister like it was a baby. It was that big. Excuse me. I did not care what he put in me to stop that pain, because I've never felt pain like that in my life. And all I could do was just keep walking. You guys seen that movie, Sybil? No, that was me. I was just walking around. God grabbed me this rainy. And I'm going nuts with this pain. This pain is so bad. And because I used drugs in other ways, they could not give me the shot that I needed. So it took 45 minutes to do that. At any rate, I woke up at my sister's home. I'm still really loaded from the pain medications from the night before. And I've got a little bag of them. And I decided it's a good thing to do to leave my sister's house, who would have taken a good care of me and watched me, and go back to my house. And I spent 6 days abusing pain medication. Now, lots of people say to me, you should not have picked up a white chip over that. Yeah, I did. You know why? I had to do that for me. First off, I thought that if I didn't humble myself and pick up a white chip, that the disease was going to take over, because it had me. Whether it was my fault, whether I made the choice to do it or not, it had a hold of me. The second thing was, if I didn't humble myself and pick up a white chip, all I could do is be a parrot in recovery and repeat what other people say and have no passion and no heart. And I don't want to live like that. I don't want to be a part of a recovery world that doesn't come from my heart and doesn't come from passion. Because I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love the people in it. So I picked up a white chip, and I picked that chip up in 2003 and fought with that. You know, my ego said, oh, my God, you could have picked up a nine-year chip. And I thought it was a good idea in my crazy, still sick mind that I should go to see the girl that picked, you know, always we celebrated our birthdays together, but she smoked pot. And she gets to pick up a blue chip, and I got to pick up a white chip. Well, that's my disease. That's my ego. So I'm okay. I'm perfectly okay today, because time means absolutely nothing. You can come in here and you can have 1 week and on any given day have a heck of a lot better sobriety than I can muster up in this little finger right here. Because I am an alcoholic. I'm also one of those people that has that other stuff, that mental, what is that, mental health stuff? I got that stuff too. So I can be a mess sometimes. And what I do is I come in and I say it out loud. If my disease is kicking my butt that day and I am saying that you are worthless, Marilyn, you're not good enough, and you don't fit in, people don't like you, I'll tell on that. I say, I'm telling on my disease today because it's telling me I'm worthless. And I know that's not true. I've done a few four steps in my time. I've done my feelings about four steps are, as if you're just coming into recovery, I suggest you do them by the big book. It's very simple. Very, very simple. No need to muddy up the water. We make things complicated as it is. Then I did a Hazelden one with that had 157 questions to it. When I got halfway through with that, I felt so dirty because it did go deeper. Because then I was ready. I was ready to go deeper, and I felt so dirty. And sometimes I would just go to a meeting and say, I'm not giving you specifics because you don't need to know all that about me, but I feel so dirty right now. And probably the last 6 years of my recovery, can someone tell me what time it is, please? Oh, that's the clock. Okay. I can't see very well. Okay, I think I can fill that up. Okay. In 2003, we come in here, and you guys say to us, you can be an agnostic, you can be an atheist, you can be a Christian, you can be a Buddhist, you can be a hullabaloo on a hilltop, it doesn't matter. Just find something that's greater than yourself. The alcohol was greater than me all that time. I worshipped that. I got down on my knees on a daily basis and said, how am I going to get it? I got to get it in my body. So I come in and you tell me I need to find a power greater than myself. Well, I've worshipped alcohol all these years. I need to find a power greater than myself. And y'all introduced me to the one that you had, and it was this higher power. He didn't have a particular name. I just knew that there was something out there that was guiding my life, and I was sure of that. But I didn't know exactly what it was. And I used that higher power for about 16 years. And I'll make this very brief about my higher power today, but I am not ashamed of who my higher power is today, and that is Jesus Christ. I became a Christian. And I became a Christian because I needed direction. Because, see, my thinking of a higher power just wasn't big enough. I put limits on a higher power that you haven't told me is really, really big. I say, that's impossible. That could never happen. And it can't in my world, but it can if my higher power gives it to me. You know, what's the biggest miracle we have on a daily basis? We're sober. Do you ever wake up and think, God, I'm not grateful for a damn thing today? I have those days. I'm grateful. I'm grateful I'm breathing, and I'm grateful I'm sober. Here in the last year, I'll go into that. In the last year, a lot of things has happened. And please, nothing that I talk about from this point on did I do. None of it. And I am not bragging to you. I'm just telling you how big my higher power is and the blessings that I have received. I married my husband 2.5 years ago. Something like 2.5 years ago. My memory's just not good. And you know, God gifted me with this home that was a double-wide mobile home. And throughout the years, I was able to offer it as a place for people to come and stay that were struggling. And for whatever reason, it's God again, it just worked out. I didn't get ripped off. I had one check stolen in 16 years because God was looking out after me. So I got married. We did bring a few more people into the house when James was there. That's my husband's name. Anyways, I was working for Immigration Services at that time. And now I worked for a company that we did the transportation from the prisons and the jails and brought the immigration people to a certain point. Then they'd decide what they were going to do for them, and then we'd take them to the next point. And I really liked that job. I mean, my job was to put handcuffs on these guys and to sit in the back and make them mind. I drove a school bus, and these guys were much easier to deal with than kids on a school bus. I mean, these guys were great. And, you know, it was funny because every year we had to do a shotgun training, and, I mean, the shotgun came to here. I'm not very tall. And I'm out there, and it's like this. And boy, isn't God's got a great sense of humor. I've worked in treatment before. This young fellow back there that I used to work in treatment with, he was a joy. He was so full of it, but you couldn't help but like him. He's just a likable guy. You know, you fall in love with these people that you work with. You know, whether they're sponsees or they're in treatment, you just can't help yourself. And I hope that nobody here that stays for any amount of time gets hard to that. Because they're going to come and go and they're going to break your heart. But you just keep that heart open and you let more come back and you try to work with them. And then maybe one out of 200 will make it. Or maybe one out of five. We're not the judge of that. God is. So at any rate, my husband comes home. I'm struggling with this job because now I am a sergeant. Okay? And I am over men that don't like me. And they do everything. And this, I am not being a victim because this really did happen. They did everything they could to sabotage me on a daily basis. And I was really getting tired of it. I was tired of praying for him. God, you get tired of praying for people sometimes. So I get a phone call from my husband. And he says, Marilyn, you're not going to believe what just happened. And I said, what? Now I'm laying down, I'm tired, and I'm hot, and I'm sweaty, and I just won't want to be bothered. And he said, I just want $1 million off a scratch-off ticket. I said, you're crazy. You did not. You're so crazy. I said, oh, stop it. And he said, no, I swear to God, I just want $1 million. Now, remember, this is not me. Guys are looking at me different now, aren't they? I said, let me talk to the lady at the store because I don't believe a word you're saying and you're making me mad because I want to go back to sleep. And this little Indian woman got on the phone and I said, excuse me, but did he really win $1 million? He said, yes, he did. He won $1 million. I said, are you telling me the truth? And she said, yes, I am, very much. He won $1 million. And I said, you need to come home. I want to look at that ticket. And he did. Okay. So, now you don't go to an AA meeting. I'm telling you now because this has already happened. It's in the past. You do not go to an AA meeting and tell people that you won $1 million. And my husband did that. And we were so blessed because they say when that happens, people come out of the woodwork. But it didn't happen to us. We were so blessed. We were able to help the people that deserve to be helped. It gave me an opportunity to have a dream of mine that, you know, at this point I'm thinking, I got a lot of money. I really don't have to work if I don't want to, which is a lie. I do need to work. I opened up a women's recovery center. My husband and I decided that it would be a good idea for me to open up a women's recovery. My husband, he decided it'd be a good idea. I have worked with men in treatment, and they're a whole lot easier to work with than women. Because they're too much like me. Okay, I see too much of me, and it triggers that ego. Anyways, that's a whole nother ball of wax, and I'm not going to get into all of that. My son, he's 26 now. He's been in the Air Force for 4.5 years, and he's the love of my life. And you know, when I got sober, I didn't know I was even capable of loving anybody or anything. I even felt like, what is wrong with me that I cannot love this child? You know, you can be a mother, and you could get him a home, a place to sleep, clothes on his back, food in his tummy, and send him off to school. You can get him everything that you need. But there's something in here that has to connect, and I didn't have that. And I had to finally understand that I didn't have that with my parents. And what I had to do was be willing to do something about it. And I went into therapy, and I did therapy for about 6 years on childhood stuff. And I can tell you today, I love that child with every fiber of my being. I'm going to tell you something that happened here recently. Is that okay, Rhonda? Okay, baby. This is my friend Rhonda. And Rhonda and I go way back. I sponsored her years ago, and I started trying to sponsor her again this time. And we're just too good of friends. Don't sponsor people and become friends, because then you don't want to call them on their stuff, and you're wasting their time. And you're going to kill them. You're going to kill them if you're not careful. So Rhonda and I have been very good friends, and I just want the best in the world for her because I just love her so much. You know, last week I had the most distinguished honor of walking through with Rhonda and her mother the death of her 21-year-old child. And I watched a woman that truly personifies what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. I saw this woman go through that with such dignity and grace. She went, in the midst of all this, and picked up her 2-year chip. Because that meant a lot to her. Because she was sober a couple of years of that young man's life. I cannot imagine the pain. And and I just, you know, I don't even think I've told you how much I appreciate you allowing me to be a part of that process, because it was just wonderful. Women are beautiful. Cherish them, please. If it wasn't for the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, I surely wouldn't be standing up here right now. You know, my first 7 days, that was before I took that third step and decided I wasn't going to be in a relationship and all that. Well, I got into a relationship. And he was crazier than the ones out there were. So I knew I needed to stay away. I think that I really have said enough. I wish that you would all pray for our recovery house. So I've got some great women in there right now. And they just need your love and your support. And I need your love and your support. And anybody wants to give me a hug after the meeting, I'm welcome and open to it. Thank you so much. God bless.
carry on.